Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 42 of It's Just Bodybuilding. Your host, Dusty Hanshaw, and of course, myself, Big Ron Partlow. And on today's show, the Cuban Missile, Santi Aragon.
It's good, Ron. Your intros are flawless these days.
Well, I always wanted to be the guy that opened David Letterman's show for him, right?
But this is a better show. But yeah.
But this is a better show, and I get to be on it instead of just like announcing and walking away, right?
Exactly. That's just the warm up that you know that you're here. Now we're fucking in business, man.
You know? So what's going on, buddy? You shaved the beard. Is that in preparation for being more aerodynamic in battle?
It's all about speed. You know, with so many things going popping off around here, I got to make sure I'm safe. So,
you know. I would tell you one thing, brother. If I lived where you live, I would be fucking packing all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Jesus,
that's
fuck,
covered.
Man. You know, it's unbelievable what I'm seeing on Instagram and the news and Twitter and shit. Unbelievable. What's up? What have you actually seen? Like, is your neighborhood just kind of normal or what?
Yeah, I mean, up here where it is, but I think we've had one hit at the Fashion Square Mall. I just feel like no one was really prepared, and I'm old school. I really just think, irregardless of what people's reasoning or why they think it's okay, I find the quickest way to stop things like that is when you start shooting people.
Yep.
I don't really have time to hear the, well, we need to do this and that. They make noise. Like, you're fucking up people's livelihoods, businesses. Yeah. And your cause is being lost, in my opinion. So, you know, I feel bad if anybody comes in my house, it'll be the last thing they ever do.
I don't even feel like the looters have anything to do with the protest. I mean, they could say whatever they want, but there's not, like, I see that people standing down by City Hall and they got their hands in the air, they're kneeling, or they're all grouped together and they're being peaceful. It's like, I'm cool with that. I'm totally all for, you know, that sort of shit. But the people wandering around they just happen to be wandering around where the nice stores are, right?
Yeah.
Breaking into Gucci and smashing all the stores. And then they do the mom and pop, you know, immigrant owned corner store. They just feel that's necessary to burn down. It just fucking enrages me.
Yeah.
You know,
and weird to see, you know, especially here. Like when I saw someone popped up about Scottsdale having a curfew, I was like, huh? What? So we had a curfew last night, had to be off the streets by 8 PM. Couldn't be out again until 5. And I mean, I get it because it stopped anything from happening last night.
Yeah. But,
you know, I got plans this weekend. I need that shit out.
I'm amazed there hasn't been just like way more people shot.
There will be. If they start going into neighborhoods.
Oh, which yeah.
Has been the conversation. If that happens, you know, it'll stop quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw that one Antifa tweet that said it's time to move into the neighborhoods and get them where they live.
Yeah, that'll be a large mistake.
That will be absolute fucking massacre, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
So let's just see what happens. Tonight might be the night. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. But I'm glad to live somewhere where guns are encouraged and do your thing.
Oh man, it's the biggest argument for the Second Amendment you could have possibly have. Like the Second Amendment argument shouldn't happen for another fucking generation after this.
Yeah,
if the cops can't
it's a quickly
you,
game changer now. Yeah,
cops can't protect you. Fucking game over. Give me a fuck. Give me all like anyone who argues against gun ownership now. You're just willing to have your throat slit for your fucking house. Yep. You know, that's my take, buddy.
I like it, man. I like it. You sound more and more
start.
American.
Let's sunshiny start.
Now that we're so happy, let's bring on the happiest man I know.
Yeah, you know? No, let's bring on Santi, man. I haven't met this dude, so it's a good way to do a virtual introduction.
There we go. Safer anyways. You can't.
Santi Aragon.
Yo.
It's just bodybuilding. I'm Ron Partlow. We haven't met yet. And, of course, Dusty Hanshaw, you know.
I think so.
It's good to have you on, man. What a crazy time we're in right now. There's always plenty to talk about or plenty to avoid talking about, whatever way you like to look at it.
Oh, we could talk about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything.
Be careful. I got some questions you aren't ready for, and you already said.
Oh, so yeah. Strap on right now and get ready.
Yeah, I think Dusty was messaging some ex-girlfriends of yours just to get some good questions to ask. He does that sort of shit.
This is going to be very interesting. Make sure this is password protected. So yeah,
yes, yes. No, man, it's good to have you on. Obviously, bodybuilding has taken quite the hit this year. Who would have known that everything we do and everything we are about would just kind of become illegal for a little while? How have you kept up during all of this? Like gym wise, you've been one of the lucky guys who's got a key somewhere, or are you like Matt Jansen who puts a home gym in your garage, or what are you doing?
Well, if I had the means to, if I even had a garage, I would probably end up doing that. Even though you do go on like OfferUp and stuff, and like a pair of dumbbells are like $1,000. So yeah, the timing wouldn't have been so great, but I'm lucky enough to be good friends with two gym owners down here. You know, the bodybuilding scene in Miami is, at least I don't think it's anywhere like it is anywhere else, where you got a lot of hardcore guys and stuff doing actually competing and stuff. So there's very limited gyms down here where it's kind of caters to people that compete. And you know, they all know me getting ready for shows and stuff like that. So they offered, you know, whenever you want to come in, you know, we'll open it up for you. And that's kind of been how my life has been the last couple of months, is just, you know, after the Arnold, it was just, okay, I'm getting ready for the next show. And then it gets canceled. And then yeah. I'm getting ready for the next show, canceled. So four shows in that get canceled. And I feel like I'm already so deep in the hole, you know, with prep, that it's kind of like at this point to say like, oh, fuck it, I'll just wait until next year. That'd be stupid.
You've had strided glutes for like 6 months now. Is that where you're at?
No. I wish that strided glute window is open for that just last week. And then anything after that, as soon as I eat like a burger, it's over. Like,
right.
You know, after the show, it's kind of over. So we kind of just kind of like we try to decondition myself a little bit, you know, pull back from the cardio, up the calories, you know, slowly, and then kind of get myself in that good position where, you know, for depending on when the show was, you know, it's been 16 and then it's been 12 weeks and then it's kind of changed every couple months because the shows got canceled. So we're at a good spot right now, being about 9 weeks out of Tampa.
Right. You get the odd guy who's like, he hits that, you know, maybe he hits like the 10-week period. So he's like, okay, I'm putting the trend in. And then all of a sudden his show's canceled. So now he's 12 weeks out. So he's like, okay, I'm taking the trend out. And then he's 10 weeks in again. So he puts a trend in again. And then 2 weeks later, I take the trend out.
Usually the window for all of that for me is 8 weeks out. So eight weeks out is when I really start pushing hard.
Those guys.
So it's been 8 weeks out about four times.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
so you do like 5 days of Winstrol tabs and you stop.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like the last show was before it got canceled was Boston. Mm-hmm. So I was getting ready for Boston and it hit that 8 week mark. And then, you know, we added everything. And then a week later, they cancel or postpone it. And then it's like, all right, we're getting off of everything again, and you're back at 12 weeks out again. We'll get back on everything at 8 weeks out. So
who knows? Maybe someone will stumble upon like a new pulsing regimen.
Would be great. Diabetes pump.
Take for like a week and then give them 3 weeks to wash out, and they turn out to be more effective. There'll be some like new strategy come out of all this.
Hey, at least I could see like how where I need to position myself in like these shows, being like certain amount of time out and kind of, we've like experimented this whole time, you know, with my diet and stuff. So it's been kind of cool because, you know, I'm usually not this high in calories this close to a show, you know, right. About 9 weeks out. So it's kind of actually been really good for me to kind of reverse this whole time and not really knowing. And you know, when you have a schedule, getting ready for shows and you see, oh, you know, something's 12 weeks out and you're like, man, that feels like a really long time. But every little mini prep that got canceled, you know, it doesn't feel like it's been such a long time, but yeah. I've been dieting since December. And
maybe this is will start like the new trend will be the 40-week prep.
The 40-week prep. I swear to God, after this, I'm like, fuck this. I'm taking like a whole year off after this. This shit has fucked me up.
What other areas of your life has this affected? You know, like Dusty, basically, his life hasn't changed at all. Like, actually, at all. Like, he didn't know there was a lockdown until a couple weeks ago.
You go outside, and you're like, where are all the cars?
He just thought that it was, like, just quiet at the gym. He just thought it was summertime.
I always have went in the back door, so I didn't think anything of it.
So what about you? Like, are you, you know, is this ruined? You know, like, you know, some guys are like, man, the Tinder scene's just not what it used to be. Or maybe it's more than it ever was. I don't know. I mean, like, what about the rest of life? Are you like, I realized that my number one hobby is actually going out to eat. And I didn't realize that, you know.
That was gone.
Like, whoa, well, shit, I need,
for,
yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, so what about you?
Me, it's been, well, since I'm in Miami, everybody usually knows me as the party guy. So the party scene.
I haven't heard any of these stories.
Oh, okay, good. let me enlighten you then. Okay. So everything's been closed here, like the obviously no clubs, no nothing like that. Again, a blessing for me, getting ready for a show. So there hasn't been really any kind of like, you know, feeling like I'm missing out or, you know, missing out on my friends or anything like that. So that's that part of my life, you know, which is, you know, some people might say it's not the best part, but I do enjoy going out and stuff like that. That's been closed. Boat, you know, on the weekends, we usually take the boat out for some time. Okay. Until about last week, it's the marina's opened up again. So that was out. And then business wise, you know, my waist trainer, brand, you know, it's been, In the beginning, because that time, like right around March, is when everybody starts prepping for shows. So everybody is buying waist trainers to use for their prep. And that slowed down like significantly that first month of lockdown, because everybody that was starting prep kind of just said, oh, well, I'm not going to do anything until, you know, people figure things out. So it kind of slowed down a little bit. And then when people figured out, oh, shit, this lockdown is going to be like way longer than what I thought, and all I'm doing is sitting at home, I'm going to just start working out outside. So then sales finally started picking up. But the supply line has been really, really hit hard, at least the way that I get my waist trainers, the manufacturing of the waist trainers, everything was hit very hard. So I had to invest a lot of money to get a lot of product here, not knowing what the future holds for, you know, importing and exporting.
Right? Yeah. 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 I know Dusty put up a picture of you and asked his followers to hammer questions. And I was impressed with the variety you got, Dusty.
I could just imagine.
Well, you can always tell when it's either someone who knows of you or someone who just knows you. Because I'm like, oh, this is just a blatant shot here. And because that's how we roll, I'm like, well, we're fucking definitely answering that one.
It's all fun and games.
Yes. Yeah, so look, I want to start off with, you're dieting, so I guess it's a dieting question. Mm-hmm. Do Cubans eat ass?
Yes, because yes, because, I mean, we usually end up with the Latin girls, and the Latin girls just have a very, very fine taste to that. So it definitely cuts any kind of sweet tooth that you may have during prep.
See, that I told you. It was a fucking prep question.
So I sort of have an emotional attachment to Miami.
You do?
I grew up watching Miami Vice.
Okay.
And I was like obsessed with Miami Vice, and I wanted to move to Miami when I got older, and I wanted to drive a white Ferrari and the whole bit. And so it's just something like when I first went to Miami a couple years ago, I went and shot at Miami Iron Gym. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm finally fucking here. You know, we went down to the beach and everything. It was awesome, man.
Yeah. And great. I mean, the weather, what sucks too, is that the weather's been perfect. And this whole quarantine, and we can't go to the beach or anything.
And my coworker and I, we went out for dinner, and we just walked around this little restaurant district, And I was blown away with how beautiful every single woman was. Mm-hmm. Like, I know Dusty's in Scottsdale, so he's
Good looking there.
It's not bad here either.
But it was crazy. So, I mean, you guys must be losing your minds.
You become kind of immune to it, you know, for the most part, because you see it so frequently when you go out to these clubs and stuff like that. You know, there's nothing that you haven't seen yet.
Right.
So I could just imagine, like, living in, you know, another part of the country, and then you come here and you're like, how do you do it? You know, how do you do it? I'm like, I don't. That's why I'm always out.
Exactly. I actually went to Elevation gym, and we were up there with a couple guys, and you could tell who had never been to Miami before. Because the looks on their faces with what the women wear to train in, they're like, I like walk over and close their mouths. I'm like, hey, your mouth's open, dude.
That's how it is. You don't want to not go to the gym because you don't know what you might miss. So you want to be in the gym.
See, Dusty has several memberships because there's reasons he goes to each gym. And he happens to do his cardio at the big super fitness club.
Uh-huh.
Right? And very back step mill.
Nice and high. Can see
good elevation.
Hey, whatever gets you on the cardio machine, you know.
I'm like, please stay on the one in front. If you get off, I'm done.
Yeah. I got one off Dusty's page here. Who are your top five posers of all time? I want to see how many we agree on here.
Well, number one is gonna be Lee Labrada.
Amazing.
Hands down, the best. I will put him up, you know, next to anybody. Effortlessly.
We agree wholeheartedly.
It's like a fucking dance. Like, if you actually sat there and counted how many poses he does it inside of a routine, you're like, how? I didn't even realize he did that many in a routine. So definitely I'm going to have him at number one.
Yes.
I enjoy watching Sean Ray. His routines too, as mm-hmm. I really liked his routines, especially when he had hair before he
shaved. When he was posing, wasn't he posing to Mariah Carey and stuff? Yeah. He'd come out. Yeah.
He was really good at posing to those songs. More recently, I mean, I got my pro card with him as Terrence Ruffin. I mean, he's fucking like, I was hoping, and I'm so glad that it happened at the Arnold that I went before him. Because I knew that anybody that was going after him is fucked. You know, so I was so happy that I got to go before him. Let's see. Because I have a top three, and I don't really think about too many in four, you know, position four or five. Well,
okay, so a couple honorable mentions then. If you got your top three already out, you go for it. Who else do you think is great?
Let's see. I really enjoyed Muhammad Makwe. Just that one routine that is, like, you know, all over the internet that he always does. That's just so. I mean, it's a long fucking routine.
Is it like the 83 Olympia or something? Yeah. Like it's,
yes.
it's yeah, or that, maybe the 84 when Haney won or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That one was pretty awesome. And then when I was first getting into bodybuilding, I always kind of resonated with people that kind of were my height, you know, obviously like Lee Labrada, he's a short guy. I always loved watching Lee Priest. So that was my other one would be Lee Priest. But there's so many, you know, there's so many guys. Hita Tata is another one that's really, really awesome to watch, you know. But those three, I would say the first three that are my top.
Right.
Good picks.
Yeah. Those ones, I think anyone that knows the sport can be like,
yeah,
I'm good with that. All right, here's one that actually is a serious one too, because I think a lot of guys don't know how to do this. How do you balance between the party lifestyle and the bodybuilding lifestyle? Is there a switch? What do you do?
I'm still figuring that out.
What does party actually mean? Like, to you, what does party actually mean? Like, how many different levels do you have when you party?
There's no, we always, it's the same shit with my friends. It's like, we always go in saying, nah, bro, it's going to be a chilled night. It's going to be chill. We're, you know, we're just going to relax. And then before you know it, you're at 11, Club 11, and it's 6 a.m. And then you're driving home and everybody's going to work and you feel like a piece of shit. And this is I would say that this is just so that people can understand, this is not during prep. During prep, I'm very focused. I will go out to the beach. I will go out on a boat. I'll have my meals with me and everything like that. But those long, epic nights like that are strictly off season.
What does going out on the boat mean? Like, what type of a boat are you on? Like, are you going out on like a cigarette boat, or you have like a yacht that you got, like, boats, or
you still have the mindset of Miami Vice?
Oh yeah, of course. I don't know what cigarette boat
around in. He has a, I forget which kind of boat it is, but it's a 36 foot. He's got like 400 motors on it. I mean, he has it set up so it's like perfect for a party. The sound system is insane. He's got like this shower thing that glows, and then
everyone needs that.
So how many people fit on the boat, like when you're having a party? Well,
right now, because of quarantine has fucked everything up, they have a limit on the size boat that you have. So driving the boat, you have a limit to that. As before, however many life vests you can put on the boat is how many people you can have on the boat. So it wouldn't be unusual if we're riding like maybe 25, 30 people, and then you know, we meet people out on the sandbar, and then we just tie up about 4 or 5 boats, you know? So to give you it was my friend's birthday 2 weekends ago, and he rented a yacht, and it was a 95-foot yacht, but they only allowed 16 people to ride on a 90-plus-foot yacht. Like, that's insane. Like, that's social distancing set aside, like, you could literally be on a part of the boat and not see the other person the entire time. And then once you park on the sandbar, then it's a free for all. As long as the boat's not moving, like we had maybe 60 people on the boat at one time there, and it was just absolutely insane. So that would be like a boat day, you know. We're going on a boat, you know. You might think, oh, it's a, you know, family thing, and you know, you tie up on the sand. No.
So there's not like ham sandwiches and.
There is no pre-made. No, like I said, I have to bring my own meals because nobody fucking brings no food. It's always, oh, you come in, they bring a bottle. It's like, okay, guys, we have like 17 bottles here and not one sandwich, not one anything. So they see me like eating my MegaFit meal there, and they're looking at me. I'm like, don't even fucking think about it. I'm like, you should have brought at least fucking potato chips or something.
Right.
It's a long fucking day just on the vodka.
Well, that's usually a boat day. You come back and then you go out again.
Yeah, you know, go back. What do you go back and have a shower and a nap and have a meal, and then you meet at the club at like 9 o'clock?
No nap. No, by that time it's probably like around 10 o'clock. And then by the time you shower and, you know, maybe get something to eat, you're out again. Yeah.
And then
you'll probably jump to another place after that. It's not the best, you know. You have to schedule an off day the next day. So part of how you set up.
You have to schedule an IV the next day.
The next day is just eating and sleeping and just recovery. Yeah,
which goes through your phone. That would be the next week. That would be the next week for you.
Hey, if you're not used to it, it could be a week. It could be a week.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Exactly. And that's how I felt after the boat day the other day. Is just every part of my body hurt. Like, I don't know why. Like, I didn't train legs or anything. My legs were killing me. Like, everything is like, I'm not built for this shit anymore.
Hey, what's going on, guys? We're going to take a really brief pause from this episode of It's Just Bodybuilding to shout out our sponsors, and then we will get right back to the show. So first of all, I just want to give a quick shout out to Azoth. They're our new great sponsor. I've been using them for at least a couple of years now. This is a total productivity product, basically, as Prady would say. This is about helping to increase just how much you can get done each day. It'll help to increase your attention span and your focus. It'll help with memory and cognition. At the same time, it's not going to overstimulate you like doing extra cups of coffee would. So you're going to feel motivated and energized. At the same time, you're not going to feel all stimmed out. Plus, it makes it for a great pre-workout too. So definitely, guys, if you want to try to get more stuff done and get more out of your life, then this would be a great way to supplement that. It's like performance enhancement for life. So if you do give it a try, I want to know what your own feedback is too. So you guys know how to get a hold of me. Let me know what you think about Azoth. You can go to getazoth.com if you're international. If you're in the US, go to the Amazon link that we have in our show notes, and that'll get you the best deal. And also, guys, I want to give a huge shout out to TrueNutrition.com for standing by us and for sponsoring our podcast for so long. I really appreciate it. They are a top quality product. Everything is third-party tested. And I didn't even know this until recently, that if you buy, say, 5 pounds of protein, you actually get 5 real pounds of protein. They measure out the 5 pounds of protein. And then from there, they add in all the flavors. So what you end up getting is going to be closer to like 6 pounds of product. You don't get that if you go to the store and buy, you know, Dymatize from GNC or, you know, what other companies you look at. If you buy 5 pounds of protein, you get 5 actual pounds. So you're getting a hell of a deal. It's already wholesale prices. They have everything else you could possibly need for bodybuilding. Check them out, TrueNutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES. That'll get you some additional savings. Plus, it will help to support our programming, of course. Guys, thanks for listening to the ads, and thank you so much for choosing to listen to our stuff. I really appreciate it. Let's get back to the show.
Did you, I got to ask, because I'm curious about this part, though. Do you find that by having both aspects of life, when you do lock into bodybuilding, is it just effortless once you get cracking?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for too long. I mean, you know, at least in my eyes, compared to everybody else that's kind of just coming up in the other divisions and stuff like that. You know that somebody's been somewhat long in bodybuilding or competing when you got in before when there was only bodybuilding.
It's right.
Like when you talk to people that compete now and you're like, oh yeah, because there wasn't what? There was no other division at that time.
What do you mean before? Yeah, I know what you mean.
What are you talking about? Yeah, that you could only do bodybuilding.
How old are you? I'm 31. 31. Ah. So when did you start training? Like 14 or something?
I played hockey before bodybuilding. So I played hockey for 10 years. And then it was an easy transition from hockey because we were in the gym already, maybe not training like a bodybuilder, but you know, we knew the basics, benching and, you know, squats and everything like that. Condition in the off season. So it was just a matter of don't do cardio anymore, eat more, and then just train. And then kind of like the size just kind of came on from there. So, I mean, after that, my first show was 17 years old. I did a natural NGA show local here. And then after that, at 18, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to do Teenage Nationals.
What year was your first show?
My first show was 2007.
Yeah. No, there were no physique, no bikini.
Nothing.
Figure had one piece suit.
I think Figure had the one piece suit still, didn't they?
Yeah, they had the 2 rounds at that time.
I remember my third show, which was in 99. That's how old I am. But I remember I showed up to my third show and they're like, yeah, we have this new division. It's called fitness. And that was the first time we had anything other than bodybuilding. And it was the girls doing the cartwheels and the handsprings and then the physique round. Right. Mm-hmm. So they had like the Monica Brandt, you know, like, you know, fitness sort of thing. That was, I remember when that started, but yeah,
I still consider fitness like one of the OG kind of divisions, you know, with
for sure. Yeah, with women's and it has such a low number of people in it. I think just because the injuries are like, they just get worn out, don't they?
It's so fucking hard. Like, can you possibly imagine trying to get in the best shape of your life while also making sure that your performance, that you can manage these routines and practice these routines all day? That in my opinion, that's probably the hardest division, and that's probably why you don't see those girls as conditioned as, like, let's say Figure, etc. And usually the ones that are the last. Most conditioned. Yeah, usually the ones that are the most conditioned are the ones that win. Oksana, you know, this other girl that just won Missy, I think her name is. I mean, they're always shredded to the bone. But can you imagine? Like, I can barely like walk down the hallway at, you know, when the body fat is that low. I can't even imagine doing flips and push-ups and all that shit.
Yeah. Another thing that I was talking to someone about, how the numbers in that category have dropped so much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the other categories take people, you know, take people away. But also is, you know, most of the girls that do fitness, they've already done 10 years of like gymnastics or hardcore dancing or cheerleading. And they're already carrying like shoulder injuries, wrist injuries, elbow injuries when they get into fitness. You know, like their training age is like 40, you know,
they're older.
Yeah. You know, it's like they played football, you know? And so that's hard on them too. Mm-hmm. But what about you? What's your favorite divisions to watch other than, you know, your own?
212 is probably one of my favorites just because, again, I can relate to the guys there. They're shorter, you know, stockier, and there always seems to be exceptional conditioning in that division compared to some of the open, not maybe the top tier open shows, but like the more regular open shows, you kind of see this discrepancy between conditioning, but you always see the 212 guys, at least the top five, always shredded.
Yep.
Do you ever have the desire to take your physique in that direction?
I was lucky enough to do last year after I did.
Oh yeah, you did a 212, didn't you?
Yeah, I did a 212 show about 4 weeks after that and placed third.
Yeah. Okay.
I was
really
happy about that.
Yeah. What do you think of, you know, the fact that you're capable of doing both? Like you could slide into either. Would you do it again?
This is the first time that I say, but for Tampa, I'm going to do 212.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Because you're like around what? You're like what, 194?
Yeah, right now I'm about 194, 195. So okay. I'll probably be on stage, I'm assuming maybe like 185, which is about 5 pounds heavier than what I was at Dallas Europa. Dallas Europa was insane though. Like I went to that show just to bridge another classic show because it was not like the two shows that were back to back were really far apart. Right. And they were about like 9 or 10 weeks apart. So Andrew Vu, he's my coach. He lives out in Dallas. So I told him, I'm like, yo, what do you think if I do Europa and I do 212 for that show? Just to kind of, you know, get me to that 5 week out, you know, and then we'll continue. Mm-hmm. He's like, fuck it, let's do it. And I'm like, okay. And then probably the best part was just eating. I got to eat. Like, I don't eat shit for classic. I don't eat anything.
He's on a lettuce diet.
I literally starve for classic. Like,
yeah, because what's the weight for your height? What do they tell you? Have
still, it's still pretty high. 180 still for my height, still pretty high. But I have an issue with the scale moving down in numbers. Like, I'll look completely different, but the scale hasn't fucking moved in like 6 weeks.
You're great at getting in shape and terrible at losing weight.
At losing weight, yeah, whatever that means. Exactly. So we were able to eat up for that show, and I felt great. You know, I felt awesome. I looked awesome, and I remember going to the weigh-in because that part for me for classic is like the most nerve-wracking part for two reasons. One is obviously making sure that I'm at weight and their scale's not off because I'm talking like when I go into weigh-in, I'm like 0.5 under my limit. You know.
Yeah.
So it has to be like on the money. That's one reason. And then the other reason is they measure me wrong.
Yep.
Because I have to be 5'5 to be 180. If they measure me at like 5'4 and like just their millimeter off, it's 175. And then at that point, I won't be able to compete.
Right.
So I go into that way and like so anxious and so much anxiety that I'm like, God, please. I hope that they measure me right. I hope they measure me right.
You put a little extra gel in the hair just to thicken it up a little.
Look at this. I blow dry the shit out of it so that it's all the way up and I gel it so that there's some resistance coming down.
Yes, yes. You should reinforce it.
But it's happened before.
I remember you telling a story. I can't remember where I heard it, but you were telling a story about doing like 30 minutes of stairs in the lobby of the hotel.
Yeah, man. It was horrible. It was horrible. That was for Puerto Rico. So I had my scale with me, and the scale that they were using was about a 3 pound difference. Like 3 pounds. It's a lot.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So 3 fucking pounds. So if I would have known that, obviously, like, I wouldn't have started, you know, eating just a little bit to kind of keep my weight, you know, with the water and everything. So I get there. It's about 30 minutes before the weigh-in, and then they had the scale out. So I'm like, shit, I'm just going to weigh myself now. So I take off all my clothes, and I weigh myself, and then I look down, and my dad's there with me. And then he's like, how you looking? And I look up, and I was just white. And then he's like, how much are you off? I'm like, 3 fucking pounds. And he's like, well, looks like you got to do cardio now. I'm like, fuck. So I put on all my sweats, and it was in Puerto Rico, and it was raining. So I couldn't go outside. I'm right. Like, God damn it. So the only thing that I had was the stairs in the middle of the lobby. And I, for the whole time until they called every athlete, I was going up, down, up, down, up, down. Just people were walking into the lobby like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? Up, down. And I'm spitting in a cup, spitting in a cup all the time. Eventually I made weight, but it was like, that's the part that I hate the most is that anxiety going into the classic. So 212 will be a lot more fun.
Yeah. You're sometimes not worried about being 213.
No, like in Dallas, it was wild because in Dallas, you know, we were able to start carving up like maybe like 2-3 days before, very light. And then it progressively got, you know, more and more as water was being pulled. And so I go into the weigh-in and I was still drinking about a gallon and a half, you know, going into weigh-in. And I have my gallon with me and, you know, all my clothes, all the guys there have trouble making 212, you know, kind of like the same issue that I have in classic. So they're stripping down, you know, completely. I weighed in with all my clothes on and my shoes.
You know, no fear. Are you going to hold that gallon? Yeah. Yes, I am.
You're going to hold that gallon? I should have. I still would have made weight. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, what did you actually weigh for that show?
When I got back to his apartment or his house after the weigh-in, because remember, I weighed in with all my clothes.
Yeah.
The morning of the show, I was about 190. Yeah. About
190. Okay. Big difference.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was about a 10-pound difference between Puerto Rico Classic and then also that show. But I was fully carved up, fully, you know, double quarter pounder, ready to go.
Now, now looking at the photos, which physique do you like better?
I like 212 better. I mean, the issue that I always have is eating enough so that my legs look full and hard and round, and so that they don't square out because they're still depleted. And also at the same time, I have an issue with my obliques. My obliques, as soon as I start eating carbs, my obliques will start, you know, thickening a little bit, which is okay for bodybuilding because, you know, your posing trunks are tapered up. So you still got that nice flow. And in classic, those trunks are square. So there's no really way to hike the posing trunks up to give you that taper. And then when everything else is completely full, it kind of takes away from your obliques kind of getting that wide look. In classic, your obliques are wide, you're fucked because you're going to be going against somebody like Terrence Ruffin again that has like a 23-inch waist and has hollow bones. Right. So it's Birdman. Very difficult to find that balance between being hard and full, but also not letting your obliques kind of, you know, kind of thicken a little bit. So I always have that problem. I just like bodybuilding better, 212.
Do you think that you'll eventually switch over now that you've had such success in the classic to where you can essentially grow and improve?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always, in the off season, I always had to cut myself at a certain point with my weight. So I couldn't grow fully in an off season. So once we hit about 195 was my cap in the off season, anything above that, it's like, well, we got to start dieting or we got to start taking out food. So that was always my limit. And then I never had an actual off season where I ran gear, like a real cycle in an off season setting to see how far I could push myself as far as weight goes. We always ran TRT 150 milligrams a week. Just food.
Whatever you don't put on muscle. Yeah. Do not put on muscle.
Exactly. And once you get to 195, like, you're done. You know, there's not really that ceiling. I could never break that ceiling because I was always restricting it. So yeah, we'll see.
So it would be difficult with because we're people who, I mean, you know, I don't know if you ever, there's a movie where they're talking about like what your number is to retire. It's something that's always locked in my mind because every Wall Street guy has a number. And and one guy finally says, hey, what's your number? And the guy answers, he goes, more. And that is bodybuilding to me. Like, I can't imagine saying you can't grow anymore.
I have to
go that way.
and that's why I enjoyed prepping more than an off season, because it was always like we're always chasing numbers, whether it's the scale or whether it's, you know, how many carbs you're going to be eating or, you know, how much weight you're pulling at the gym. Everything after I get to that point, I'm not getting stronger. You know, the scale's not going up. It's just kind of, you're just kind of in limbo at that point until you're ready to compete again.
The answer is compete all the time.
Well, first of all, it's so what you said about, you know, your off season is like 150 migs of TRT. I love that we are able to have guys like you on that can say the stuff that some of these young guys need to hear. Because, you know, you get the guys that have no physique at all and you see what they're taking and you're like, oh, this is backwards. Mm-hmm. This is completely backwards.
I agree. I mean, if you look at my Q&A ever, my Q&A is riddled 99% is all steroid questions.
Yep. Yeah.
And then a lot of them are just me mouthing off at people how stupid, you know, they come across with these questions where I'm like, dude, like read, like get on, like read or listen to somebody that knows what they're talking about, because wherever you're getting this information from, like you're going to fuck yourself up.
Yeah. I got a great question here off Dusty's thread here. It's, do you sometimes feel you have to sacrifice what you want to do in the gym to keep your classic look? Is there anything that you would love to do, but you just don't do it anymore? Like, I don't know.
Deadlifting, squatting.
Heavy deadlifting, squatting.
It was just training my legs really heavy. Mm-hmm. Because I always, every time that I, you know, was getting ready for a classic show, it was mostly, I was always coming into the gym thinking, I'm there to condition my legs. I'm not there to train my legs. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm doing cardio, the cardio equipment that I use is used to condition my legs and not train my legs. So, how to distinguish those things is like, if I'm getting ready for a 212 show now I'm slapping on the weight, which I wasn't doing that before, you know, 15, maybe 20 reps, something like that. I'm doing more of like drop sets and, you know, force reps, all these different, you know, things that I wouldn't do for classic just because I didn't want to add additional muscle, one, because of the weight, and two, because the main focus was conditioning. I need to condition my legs. So a lot of it was 20 to 25 reps, a lot of squeezing reps, and then a lot of my exercises, it looked like girl stuff. You know, it looked like I was doing a girl workout with, you know, kickbacks and this and that, just to condition the whole leg as a whole. So that's the only, probably the only difference in my training now, going for doing 212 versus classic, is the leg training.
Yeah. You can't.
I think that's
add.
Key though when you're training, because I've had this argument with clients before where they want to train a certain way, but it doesn't coincide with what they're trying to do. And I'm like, that's fine, but which one do you want more?
Of course.
Like if you enjoy training like a CrossFit person, awesome, but your waist is gonna grow.
Of course.
So
yeah,
you got to choose. Like, do you want the taper? Or do you want the training? But you can't have both, you know? And that's kind of the decision you had to make to be where you were with Classic. And now I'm stoked to hear. I kind of hope you chase 212 for a while now, because that could be fun.
I think that'll be the rest of the year going moving forward. That's all I'm going to be doing. And then the following year will just be concentrated on just 212. So I'll get about, after this year, I'll probably, you know, get it like 9 months before I'll do another show. So it'll definitely give me some time to even, you know, 5 pounds. I have like a 5-year plan kind of thing going on. I have like a 5-year plan where all I want to do, I already competed at the Arnold. So that I could cross off. I want to win a pro show and I want to qualify for the Olympia. And then that, with that, I'm good.
Right.
I don't need to prove anything else to myself or anybody, anything else, and just mostly focus on business after that.
I have a question I like to ask almost every guest, if I remember, but it's something I love talking about, because it just reminds me of, you know, being a fan of bodybuilding, which we all are. Well, what are some things, if you can think of the thing or a couple of things that truly freaked you out? Like when you saw them, you thought, holy fuck, that's amazing.
As far as like a person goes?
Physique, something in the gym, anything you've seen in your years in bodybuilding. You've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember the first times that I would say like the first couple of years when I first got into bodybuilding and lifting like a bodybuilder. This was right around the time where somebody first came up to me and told me, hey, you know, you have a good physique on you. You should probably consider bodybuilding, do a bodybuilding show. And then, you know, I binged on all the bodybuilding magazines, Muscular Development, all those things. And I try to read as much as I can from that. But I do remember one time I was in Hollywood Beach over here, which is just south of Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. And they had a Gold's Gym. This was back when actually Gold's Gyms were around. And there was a Hollywood Gold's Gym there. And I went in there. Every summer, I always spent it with my grandparents at the beach. So this was just another summer. And then at that time, I was training. So I would tell them, hey, I'm going to go to the gym for an hour and I'll be back. So I'll go walk in there. And it was the first time that I had, I don't know who this person was, but looking back, he looked like somebody that looked like Tom Platz, like the bleach blonde hair, you know, that you know, very light skin. But this guy, I remember seeing this guy, his conditioning was just mind blowing. Like he was doing walking lunges. And then this was the first time that I saw like all the fibers in the leg, like each time that he would come down. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like I couldn't even concentrate on my workout. And then he went and he started doing leg press. And I've never seen anybody stack the whole leg press, then put a bar, you know, the barbell, and then stack that too, because it was not enough room to put the plates. And I wish at that time it was like social media where you could actually video, because I would have been one of those guys like, what the fuck am I seeing right now? Kind of thing. And that was like really the first time that I was exposed to like a hardcore bodybuilder. And I'm like, if this is how you have to train to look like that. I'm like, I'm only doing like three plates on the leg press. Like how the hell does this guy do this? And, you know, you look back and you're like, wow, you know, that's such a newbie way of thinking, because you think that, oh, I'll never get to that point. And eventually, you know, you work hard enough, you're doing that same thing. And then somebody else is the one that's looking at you, you know, thinking the same thing that you were looking at before. But that was definitely the time in the gym. As far as in person goes, there was one year when I was an amateur, I was in New York and I got to go to see the New York Pro. At that time I was shooting with, I don't know, you heard Adam Silver.
Adam Silver at that time.
Adam Silver, this is back when he used to have his Silver Model Management, and he flew me up to New York. And this is kind of funny too. He flies me up to New York, and I was an amateur at this time, and I was 21. So I just turned 21. I was getting ready for a show, my first open show. And guess who Adam Silver's roommate is?
Ooh.
Brad Rowe.
Oh,
this
shit.
This is how I met Brad Rowe.
Right.
And Brad Rowe was getting ready for a show, his first bodybuilding show. First bodybuilding. And I helped I helped him with his posing. Yeah, it was surreal, like looking back and seeing how far, you know, all this has gone, and we're still like, you know, connected in the bodybuilding world. But yeah, he was his roommate. So I was able to go to the New York Pro. This is the year that Rolly Winkler won.
And
I don't know what year it was. It might have been like 2013 or something like that. So I saw Rolly Winkler win that show, but I was blown away, like what I was looking at, because I'd never seen open bodybuilding in the flesh before. Mm-hmm. And the crowd was just so like, you know, rowdy as shit, and that prejudging, everybody's screaming. And then I got to also see, he was one of my favorites, was Hidetada. So, and this is when he was doing open.
Yeah.
There was no 212 at that time. And you know how you have on the bodybuilding stage, you kind of have like the people that are not in the callouts on the side, on the rafters. Yeah. So Hide was on my side there. And I was just like, my eyes were like, this is incredible. Like, he looks so big. Like, he's my height. How the hell is he that big competing at 212? And then what's crazy is that after that same year, the show that I was getting ready for, he guest posed it.
Oh, sick.
And I went up to him and I'm like, oh, Hide. I'm like, look, man, it's really nice to meet you. I saw you at New York Pro, blah, blah, blah. And then he looks at me, he's like, oh, you're very conditioned, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then fast forward to last year, Dallas Europa, I'm in the first call out with him. So it's like all these things.
That's crazy.
Wild how things kind of happen that way. But that was mind blowing. The first New York Pro that I went to. Absolutely insane.
I love how things tie together in the sport. Like you said, like, because I think the same thing, like starting watching bodybuilding and following and idolizing these guys. Mm-hmm. And then realizing that they're in your phone now and you can call them up, like, what's up?
Just normal people.
I had an incident where I found myself having a pancake breakfast with Dorian Yates.
Oh, there you go.
And you know, I mean, I was a 90s bodybuilder, right? So, I mean, I was just sitting there like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Like, and he's wearing a Black Label Society t-shirt, you know, and we're talking about metal. Uh-huh. And I'm just like,
what's crazy
up.
is that at that time when we first started bodybuilding, and you know, these people that we looked up to in bodybuilding felt like they were millions and zillions of miles apart from us because there was no social media. Yep. So any glimpse of them was kind of just like, holy shit, like this is insane. You know, now in the modern age, everybody's so accessible, you know, to contact or figure out a way to see them or contact them or speak to them. That it kind of, that nostalgia is kind of like lost a little bit.
For sure.
You know, going to the expos and stuff like that, it's kind of lost. So I like looking back at times like these. I haven't thought about the New York Pro until like right now in so
right.
long. I haven't thought about that story in a long time. But yeah, it kind of, you lose that a little bit, but still, like us that know there was a time like that existed.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
No, we're lucky we had that for sure. When, because there was something about the days when they were gods.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like the mystique is gone now because, you know, they're in their kitchen going like, hey, I'm having my oatmeal, you know? but, you know, like it was an awesome time. It was, you know, driving, like, I remember driving 8 hours to go to a seminar.
Yeah.
Like people don't
do that shit anymore.
People won't go 10 minutes. They'll be like, no. Oh, who's in town? Oh, he's on the other side of town. Oh, yeah, I thought you meant he was close to me.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. Don't worry. He's doing a Q&A on Tuesday. So I'll just wait till that.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw him on Instagram the other day, you know, it's just different, man. But it was awesome. I remember talking to like, you know, the old time guys, like the 90s guys. Like I remember Kevin Lavroni told me that they used to just fill their suitcases with 8x10s and go to FIBO.
They make a killing. Right.
They would come home with like 20 grand each and they'd have money stuffed in their underwear around their pants. Oh, and
yeah,
just
because they can't
home.
Bring, yeah, they can't bring yep. a certain amount. Yeah. It's like drugs, but it's like, where did you get all this money from? Selling my picture.
8x10s.
Do you want one? I'll sign one for you for free. Just let me go through.
Let me sneak through here.
Please. Yeah, man. No. Was Dorian Yates your favorite growing up?
Yeah, that was the guy that like triggered, you know, like I was already a bodybuilder, but then he came along and I was like, oh, this is like extra hardcore.
Yeah,
that like, you know, he's more efficient than everyone else. Everyone's training 2 hours and he's training 45 minutes. Huh? What's this? You know, that was the big, like the big mm-hmm. sort of, that's what caused all the problems.
Oh yeah. That was the ripple effect to what you are now.
I became that kid. Oh, you're that kid that leg presses till his nose bleeds. Yeah. You know, that sort of shit. It's also the story you told, you know, I mean, Dusty has exactly the same story. I got the same story. You got the Brad Rowe story. It also shows us it's not a big thing we're doing. There's not that many people that are hardcore enough to mm-hmm. stick with this for long enough to get to the pro level. So by the time you get to the pro level, everyone, you're like, oh, I remember you. I remember you. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we already met.
And it's a tight group. Like those of us that are in that circle, it's a tight group. So it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but every time that you go to like these expos, it's like everybody else in my mind, it's like everybody else. And then it's like that group, mm-hmm. you know, of guys that have kind of been around for quite a while, and you see them competing often, and you know, I just see it much different than everybody else that's at like these expos and these events.
Yeah. No, I think people don't realize how much how tight the guys are. Like, cause you know, you'll go overseas and like last year, you know, I'm in prep, I'm flying, or two years ago, and I'm flying over to England, and multiple people reach out. Do you need anything? Things you can't mm-hmm. travel with? Do uh-huh. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're taking care of it, and they're going to compete mm-hmm. against you in 8 weeks.
Yeah. But
that's what we do. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, and if you need a gym, if you need a place to stay, you need food. You know, I mean, I did a 3-week trip in Australia one time, and a guy I was competing with, his wife calls me and is like, hey, you probably need your clothes washed, right? And I was like, yeah, I got to find somewhere. She comes and picks up all my shit, takes it home, washes it, brings it back folded. I'm like, damn.
The question is, did you beat him on stage?
Well, that's the magic. See, he got injured during the prep. but I did learn that his wife knew how to fold clothes better than mine. So he got okay. me, he got an edge on me.
I know you've traveled a lot. You're a globetrotter. You've been to India a bunch of times, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. When I was with Muscle Tech, they sent me everywhere. So I got to go to Dubai. I got to go to India twice and China twice.
And what was your China experience like? Because I've been once.
Wild. It was wild.
I try to explain how many people are there. People, it's hard to understand.
It's like Times Square everywhere. it's like Times Square during New Year's, but just everywhere possible. You can't get away from people. You can't, like, the only time where I was like relaxed was in my hotel room.
Yeah,
that's funny. Right. Like, holy shit, I don't hear like noise, all the cars and all the beeping and all the, you know, people screaming and shit. Like, that was like the only time. But I was able to see a bunch of, you know, Beijing. Where was the other place I was at? What's the other? Shanghai. Oh,
I was in Shanghai, yeah.
Shanghai, and we got to ride the train from one city to the other.
Aren't those trains? How fast was your train going?
Awesome. Super fast.
Yeah.
No, it was awesome. And the people there are just so responsive to bodybuilding. Like, I feel like that's what bodybuilding used to be before social media here, where it was like every expo and stuff like that was like everybody was a fanatic kind mm-hmm. of thing. You know, if you're in a magazine, you're like a celebrity within, you know, the fitness industry. And over there, it's just you're American, so you're a celebrity in their eyes no matter what.
Right.
So, like, I'm not a famous person in bodybuilding or anything like that. Like, I would think that some of the other guys that were there, but dude, the lines at these, I couldn't believe it. I was taking, no lie, I was taking like 500-600 photos a day there. And I'm like, I got to take a break. Like it's too much.
It's a different world, right?
From doing this in every picture, you know? But it was a crazy experience. Like, you know, the people were very nice. The food was awesome. But I do have to say, India, hands down, when people ask me the best food, Indian food is the best, in my opinion.
Oh, really? Okay.
My opinion, Indian food's like the food that I had there. I couldn't believe what I was eating. Like, right. they make things so good with so little because they're just so good at with their spices.
Mm-hmm.
So everything tastes like so much depth in everything that they make. I was very impressed, very impressed. I went in there with no expectations. You know, the place, unfortunately, is a third world country. It's very poor. You know, you feel really bad about everything, but the food was amazing. I will say that.
Wow. Have you found anything that's even remotely close in Miami that's Indian food?
Two places that I've gone here before that are owned by people that lived in India. Mm-hmm. They're very close.
Right.
Very close. Like, you know, those smells don't like hit you and you just don't forget them because you'll never smell those smells again until you actually smell them again. So some of the dishes that I got there immediately, I'm like, oh, wow, I remember this. This is so good. This is so good. The other thing over there in India that I got to go to, I got to go to a club over there in India. I try to go to a club every time that I'm out in another country just to experience, like, what is this compared to Miami? Right. So I got to go to one in Dubai, which was that was a wild story. The Dubai story was wild. So they have that muscle contest. They have like a big expo over there the muscle every year.
Show. Yeah, I've been to that last a couple years ago.
So I wasn't able to skydive. I wanted to skydive while I was there, but I was too busy with the expo, so I wasn't able to skydive. So I'm like, okay, they're having an after party for this thing. I'm like, I was there with David Paderek, and I go, I'm like, Dave, I'm like, let's go to the after party. Let's go to the club. Let's check it out. She's like, okay. So we go. We go eat something. We go to this club, and the club was in the tallest building. I forget the name, the
Burj Khalifa.
The Burj Khalifa, yeah, which was insane. It looked like a medieval tower, like unbelievable. In the heavens. Yeah, so it's in the Burj. We're like, oh, this is awesome. You know, we had a good vibe in there. Everything was cool. Drinks are double the price in Miami, by the way. Super expensive. So it was already kind of, you know, shutting down already. And it was like, it was only like 12. So I'm like, dude, I'm like, I'm not going home. I'm like, there's got to be another place. So I go up to the bartender and I tell the bartender, I'm like, yo, where do you go after this? Like, is there another better place? So he takes a piece of paper and he writes an address on there and he slips it right back to me. He goes, give this to your taxi driver. I'm like, okay. All right. So we go, we get a taxi, we give it to the guy because the guys don't speak English or anything there. So you just give him the paper and he starts driving, All of a sudden he's leaving the city and we start looking back and you see the city getting smaller, smaller. And this is like, dude, this is like, we're in the desert. There's no street lights, no nothing. I'm like, we're done. We're going to die.
This is the end.
They're going to put us in a hole. We're not going to have kidneys anymore. Like, we're fucking done. So all of a sudden in the distance, you start seeing just a hotel in the middle of nowhere, like a skyscraper starts coming up. Like, okay. I'm like, maybe we're getting somewhere. This is cool. So we finally get there. He's like, just walk in, you know, the entrance is right there. So we walk in and the person in the front, like, oh, we're trying to go to the club here. We didn't even know what the name of the place was or anything. Trying to go to the club. He's like, oh, take the elevator and go up to, you know, the 30th floor, 40th floor, whatever. So we go in there and then we get in the elevator and then it opens up. And then it was an all an open club. Like, it was open to the outside. And it was like Ultra Music Festival. Like, we just walked into the Ultra Music Festival in the middle of the desert. We don't even know how the fuck we got there. The lights, the things coming down, like the house music. It was insane.
How many people were in there?
There must have been 1,000 people there. Like, I'm not kidding you. It was like an Ultra Music Festival with the screen and everything, like a setup. It was insane. And I'm like, where are we right now? Like, where are we? And the club, if you ever go to Dubai, the club is called White.
Right?
Ah. So yeah. I wonder if they're like out of the city limits, so they get a different liquor license or something. Like, I don't know. Like, what's going on there?
No idea. I do know that they're kind of particular with how the women, because here, like, most of the women, you go out and they're like, they're hoe bags over here. Like, the women there, you don't actually see them like too close to men or anything like that. I think so that, like, the rules and the way that their culture is and stuff. So, like, that's just the only thing that I remember, and that the drinks were freaking expensive. That was about it. But it was crazy. If you ever go to Dubai, look for the club White.
Now, it sounds like exactly what I need to get myself into. You're going to underground illegal clubs is probably where you were at.
Only was on the 40th floor.
It was awesome. I got to go to a club in India. India, I swear to God, it's like 10 guys for one girl in India. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding you. I've never seen it. I've never been to a club before. And it was like, you look around like, what the? There's only guys in here. There's literally only guys in
here. You're searching
then,
for a woman.
Yeah. And then little, you know, you notice like after I learned some more stuff about India, how the population is so high for men compared to women that most men can't even get married if they want because there's not enough women in the country.
That's insanity. Yeah. That's why they're all rich. I mean,
yeah,
God, I would have a lot of money.
That's an actual thing that I heard. I didn't get to go to a club in China, but I did go to karaoke.
Oh, goodness. Fun. Okay.
It was very fun. Karaoke was very fun. Yeah. You get a little private room and they bring you like drinks and stuff. And then, you know, once you get a couple drinks down, I'll sing fucking whatever.
He's fucking ready.
I'll drink anything.
That's fucking classic. Oh, yeah. My God. I love that you go to these foreign places. You're like, just take me to a club. I have no fucking idea. You don't speak English, you know?
I mean, you're there anyways. Like I want to experience things that, you know, things that I hear, but I like to maybe compare and contrast.
Right. You
know, maybe.
And especially.
Maybe don't do that in, like, Colombia.
Well, my girlfriend's from Colombia, so she'll know the places.
Oh, damn. You have the inside track.
Actually, we already have plans.
The leaving the city thing, I would have maybe hopped out at that point. I don't know if I would.
Yeah, that was dangerous. Now I look back, I'm like, that was crazy, you know. But I trust that there was just something about that bartender that I just trusted the paper that he was giving me.
You sound like the Hangover.
Handwritten in a language that I don't know how to read. I just trusted him.
Dude, yes. You sound just like Alan in The Hangover. Oh, you mean the drug dealer in the lobby didn't seem like a shady character?
No. Roofied everybody.
Seemed like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's classic. All right. I got to grab a couple bodybuilding questions so I actually do a decent job for once in my life. I tend to never actually ask questions, Santi. I'll get like 100 and we'll ask like two.
Two.
Yeah. To the end, and I'm like,
make it three at least.
I'm like, Ron, we just talked again. We didn't actually ask any fucking questions.
I just realized we've had you for over an hour. So man, it just flew by.
It flies by.
All right, this is a good one actually. So I have to answer this one. Your time with Matt Porter. What's the biggest takeaways you learned under his coaching?
I learned a lot through Matt, like a shit ton. Like he was so knowledgeable. And you know, I just got my pro card at that time when I first started working with him. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these things that we were trying and doing were new, they were all foreign to me, you know. Mm-hmm. Trying out growth hormone, trying out insulin, trying out just the dosages that we were trying out, because there was no classic at that time. It was, we were trying to grow into two, you know, eventually to 12 bodybuilder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all these things were new. And it was kind of like an experimental phase for me because we didn't know what wasn't going to work and what was going to work. Right. And now looking back at that, I learned even the things that didn't work was a huge learning curve for me, because I can now apply it to my future preps and know that, oh no, like, let's skip that. You know, that I've tried that shit before and it didn't work. And mm-hmm. I could just kind of skip that learning curve because I went through it with him already.
Right.
So I always tell everybody the biggest things that I learned with Matt was learning a lot of things that didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just skipped through the bullshit already. And I know, you know, even if only a couple things worked that he had me try, those things are like very crucial to every single prep that I did moving forward.
Right.
So that would basically was it. I mean, he was a very good listener when it came to me telling him, like, you know, hey, this is how I feel, this is what's going on, this is what's going on. He knew how to zone in and figure out a solution to whatever, you know, what was going on.
That's awesome.
What was your take on insulin? Just interested because you mentioned it, and with a physique like yours, you know, a lot of people would have questions like
I get a lot of questions, and mostly the anything that I answer in my Q&As or questions, I always try to give them an example of my experience and not tell them, well, this is what you should do. I just tell them, this is what I did. This is what happened with me. And then, you know, you could take whatever you want from what I'm telling you. But for me, this is what it was.
Almost sounds like a good way to give advice.
Yeah, without putting the responsibility of whatever advice that you're giving to them. Like, no, I didn't tell you to do it.
Yeah,
I told you what I did.
And right, then excellent.
You figured out your own thing. So insulin, when we ran it, we were running it with growth hormone in the off season, and that was the highest amount of carbs that I have ever eaten in an off season before. Like, I usually diet at, you know, eating 200, 100 grams of carbs, and that's pretty much like my high day now.
Right.
Before with Matt, I mean, we were pushing like 800 to 1,000 grams of carbs a day. So we started running, you know, our glucose, and that was the first time that I ever like drew my glucose and was like learning about, you know, my blood sugar and all this stuff. And we were running Humalog pre and post workout.
Mm-hmm.
And man, just the pumps were insane. Like, I've never experienced pumps with just anything else that I've been doing. Even like if I run Halo, the pumps are nothing like what they were when I was, you know, doing insulin.
Really?
Yeah. Insulin was insane. Then during prep, when we started doing, getting really deep into prep, like starting 8 weeks out, we had pulled the insulin because I hold a shit ton of water on it. So we couldn't really gauge what was real fat, what was weight, you know, what my actual weight was. So we eliminated it from there, and then it kind of made everything a lot easier to manage with my weight and the way that I looked moving forward on the prep. But I think that most people just think that, oh, I take insulin and I'm going to get fucking huge. Like, you know, I'm going to grow like Ronnie Coleman or anything like that. It's like, oh, it's a tool to be used when it's appropriate.
Yep.
You know, if you're drawing your glucose every morning and you're high on carbs and your glucose is low or at a moderate rate, there's really no reason why to introduce insulin, in my opinion. You know, I feel like insulin is there as a tool to correct something that you're doing as far as pushing the max on your nutrition, or you're, you know, obviously you're a little bit insulin resistant because of all the food and you need to push that food. And if you're running something like growth hormone, it helps with that. But, you know, I didn't see a purpose, especially in classic, to have to use something like insulin.
Yeah. Okay. We find across the board that when we get into the conversation with people, everyone ends up at the same place with insulin. Kind of like,
mm-hmm. It's got its purpose.
Know? Yeah, but it's that I've never talked to someone that are like, yes, that's shit. No one ever.
It has never been a must. It has never been a must. You know, even if I would have not used it at that time, and I'm glad I did because I learned a lot from using it on myself. But I think that my glucose would have been just out of hand just because I don't know if my body was actually ready to be consuming that high amount of carbs at that time. So it helped in a sense, but again, it was everything that Matt taught me was just, everything was a learning curve, whether it worked or it didn't work. I still learned something from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that's how you become a seasoned pro.
Mm-hmm.
Is you collect your lessons one at a time.
I agree.
And it's great to have an environment where we can share, you know, stuff like that. Like, you remember, you know, a couple, well, 15 years ago, you couldn't talk about certain things.
Nothing.
You know, and the magazines weren't printing anything, and it was all hush hush, and it was just different. And then, of course, we went through the shit storm of the message boards and the information being too much nonsense. But I think we are getting correction now, because actual real champion people are able to express themselves now. It's not like the internet warlock wizard who's putting out his stuff and the pros still have to keep quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, because that was the worst phase that we went through.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I would have been open with all this stuff. So I feel like that's how my Instagram and that's how my Q&A started blowing up, essentially, was because I was talking about all of this very openly and just like, this is the reality. And I figured, I'm like, well, people are going to tune into my stuff that I'm talking about, and they'll probably end up buying a waist trainer anyways. So it's like a win-win. But I was under contract with Muscle Tech, mm-hmm. and I was unable to talk about any of this. So right. I was with them for 4 years, but I would have been talking about that shit four yeah. years before that, just because I'm like, well, people need to know the reality. And if mm-hmm. people know that I'm not bullshitting them and giving them a bullshit, you know, fake answer, then if I sell them a product, whether it's, you know, vitamins that actually work, or, you know, my products or whatever I'm associating myself with, they're already going to trust me because they know that the answers that I'm giving them are not bullshit answers.
Yep.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and fire off everything you need to let people know, like, where they can get you, how they can help you out, you know, your sponsors and all that stuff. Give them the full rundown.
How much time do we have?
Not to brag, but I have 50 sponsors.
So for the Paragon Waist Tapers, right now we're completely out of stock. The supply line is horse shit right now. So I'm waiting for a big shipment, and most people that watch me that have been sending me millions of emails already asking me, when are you going back in stock? Everything's out of stock. Yeah, no shit. I know it's out of stock. no shit. It'll be back in about 2 weeks or so. So just, you know, on my Instagram, @IFUB_Santi, you'll find all the updates and everything. I'm very on top of telling everybody all the new sales and all the stuff. So they'll binge on that. I recently got signed with Revive. So Revive is, you know, I was buying their stuff regardless already. You know, I was already taking all their vitamins, you know, all their liver and the kidneys and the stuff for my cholesterol and right. my blood pressure. And my blood pressure, I was taking all their stuff already. So they got me on just recently. So I have one of those link tree things on my bio where, you know, instead of
see it all,
well, these are my coupon codes or whatever. Just go on my link tree on my bio and you'll see all the discounts and everything. You know, Young LA, the clothing. I don't know if you guys fit in Young LA clothing.
No.
You guys are too big for Young LA clothing. Young LA clothing. I started working now with a clinic out of Orlando that they do TRT. So anything that people need as far as getting the correct blood panels done prior to jumping on TRT or anything like that, they're called Rejuvenation Care Clinic. And they pretty much very easy process. They send you your blood work, you pay for it, and then they have a physician call you with all the results. And if you qualify for that, it's a monthly subscription of $150 a month. And they cover your TRT, your anti-aromatizing drugs. They also offer peptides and everything if somebody's interested in that. So it's pretty much, you know, set.
God bless America.
I know, right? And I was telling somebody the other day at the yacht thing that I was at, because they had mentioned this. Back in the day, it was so difficult to get a prescription for TRT or anything God. Like that. It was impossible. It was absolutely impossible.
I was just telling someone about the 90s the other day, and I was like, the reason we took so little gear is because good gear was so hard to get, and it was so expensive. You know, like you'd pay $25 for a mil of Sustanon, uh-huh. you know, and people would be like, well, what would you use for prep? And it'd be like, well, depends on what your guy had.
Well, we had.
Exactly. Like he'd open the bag and there's one Windstraw left. You're like, that's mine.
Give me it.
You know, like it was just.
absolutely right. I mean, I remember at one point as an amateur, I was paying like $150 a bottle, you know, like something $200 a bottle. Because it's like either I get it here or I get it nowhere, because I don't know anybody else that has it. So
this is my guy, and this is the brown bag he's got. So let's do this.
You've been to many parties that probably have similar themes.
They do. Just bring it over here.
I may have taken pills that I didn't know what they were before. I may have done that. I may have been in a situation where I was like,
How'd you feel?
Well, you know, it's New Year's Eve 2000. It was good.
That sounds like my Saturday night.
Well, man, thanks for coming on. You know, thanks for giving us so much of your time. I know that you're in demand and have plenty of people to message back on Instagram and keep up with your hordes of fans and and good luck with the endless prep, putting the drugs in and taking the drugs out and putting never the drugs
ending.
In again.
This shit is never ending. It's like I'm in a dream right now. I don't even know what's real life anymore.
Well, maybe this would be the perfect little combination to the safe.
There you go. Know?
Okay.
We'll see.
Thanks, man. Santi Aragon, everybody.
Thank you both. I love you guys. Be safe.
You bet. You bet. We'll send you all the links, and if you want to put a swipe up to the show or whatever, we'll send that all to
I
you.
I have good swipe up, so swipe up.
Yeah. No, help us out. Help us out.
I will, guys. I will.
Okay. Thanks, all right, we'll Santi.
See you. Anytime. Be safe.
Boom.
Fantastic.
Ron, I'm getting terrible at paying attention to what time it is.
No, I know, and our guests are getting terrible at feeling comfortable and sticking around.
I know. I love that part. I'm like, no? I don't feel, that's why I don't notice. We're just talking, and I'm like, you said it's been over an hour. I was like, it has? I look over, I'm like, oh.
I always have shit. That. I always, once we hit the hour, I always have a little bit of guilt.
I just assume that's when you're starting to feel like you need to pee. So you have like a timer.
Yeah, maybe the pee triggers a guilt. I don't know. It's one of the two. My bladder's connected to my guilt center.
Puts pressure on it.
Yeah. So, it's funny because I hadn't met Santi yet, and you know, whenever we have a guest on that you know I don't know as well or haven't met, you know, I'm always like, hope this goes well. You know, I know how dislikable I can be, unlikable. So we don't get off on the wrong foot, but that was great. You know, just you seem to suggest good people.
I try my best, you know. I like people that, you know, that have a good time. Got some, you know. And Santi's actually, and we didn't even touch it, but he's fantastic at the business aspect. He gets.
Yeah, I mean, we almost need to touch on it. You could just tell, like, I mean, he's got fucking 50 sponsors or whatever, you know. Like, he's clearly making them all happy. You know, people don't keep sponsors and collect more and more sponsors like that unless they're clearly showing some sort of value.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, he's doing the business end of it. I'm not sure what else he does. We never got into that. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe well, I mean, the waist trainer thing is a huge business for him now, the Paragon. And then, you know, he doesn't coach anymore, but he does do the Q&As. So for those of you who enjoy those, make sure to give him a follow because I think Santi does 2 or 3 a week and he does them all verbally. So he'll actually answer each one and, you know, and he gives good information, which I think that's an important part of our job is to kind of guide people where they should go to listen, because sadly, we all know that everyone's talking, but there's only a small group that I suggest you go listen to. And he definitely knows his shit.
Yeah, I agree. What's the plan for the rest of the day, Dusty?
Dude, I'm in recovery mode. I am so beat. I found a gear once my body was healthy again. Like I kept like tinkering.
Didn't
like
you
a
do
little,
leg yesterday?
Little afraid. Oh fuck yes.
Yeah.
And I knocked the shit out of myself. I'm training legs twice a week now. And I had one of those like middle of the night where I was like, if I don't take like some Motrin, I'm not gonna sleep already.
What how do you feel about the Arsenal hack squat that you're using?
I love it because the big thing is my training partner and I we use a different degree of angle of the platform.
Right.
Because he has knee issues and you know I can pretty much whatever is whatever.
How many holes do you want visible when you do it?
2.
Oh, okay. I like 4.
He does 4.
Yeah. I need a 90 degree, like whatever the hack squat's at. I want the platform at 90 degrees.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He does that.
I don't like it. I don't like it when the platform's open too much.
I put my feet lower. And I found 2 is awesome for if I go any further, I hit the bottom every rep.
Right. I trained alone the other day and I found that if I put the stoppers up just one hole, it is like I am a millimeter from touching and all I have to do is just
if you miss, yeah.
Yeah.
See, even with where I'm at now, if I'm not careful, I tap every rep.
Yeah, I like that. I like that machine with that platform adjustable and the stoppers. I can get them just perfect for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because you know a lot of hacks don't have stoppers and I'm tall, so I can't. Like I sit
and you can't
still
just bury
it.
Yeah.
Like I remember getting like, you know, going down and realizing I'm not going to make it. And like literally picking my feet up real quick and putting my legs out, you know, and then just hitting the bottom like bang, you know,
riding it down.
Yeah. Just riding it down. No, it's been crazy at the gym. So we're we're going into our a Tuesday will be 2 weeks since we opened. It's really, I mean, today's Monday, so we might have another crazy Monday, but it's really interesting because Monday and Tuesday, we've been getting like a really big bubble around 3 to 6 in the afternoon,
right,
where there's a lot of people in line. Yeah. And like we had people wait like 45 minutes to get in, but just for a short period of time, like the, you know, they'll be asking people in line how long you've been waiting. They're like, oh, 10:15, 10:15. They're all fine. And then all of a sudden there'll be like 5 to 10 people that waited like a long time.
Right.
And then the next guy behind him is like 20 minutes. And then the next guy's 10 and it's back down. But I just hate the fact that there's people waiting that long. But we looked through back through the computer and we saw like Thursday and Friday, we had no lines at all. Mm-hmm. We just walk in and train. We're like bouncing off capacity all day. It was beautiful.
Right.
And we looked at the early part of the week when we had the bad lineups and the last part of the week, we had no lineups and we had the same number of people in both days.
No way.
Yeah. So it's just about, all about when they come.
Yep.
You know, if a few more people just come earlier, we just sail right through that busy period with like a 10-minute wait. No problem.
That's crazy. I was going to think the opposite because gyms are always busy here early in the week and then they take it down. You know what I mean?
Same number of swipe-ins, like 20 people off.
Yeah.
All through the week. So it's very interesting. So I'm hoping that this Monday, Tuesday are, you know, a little bit smoother. Also too, there's going to be a New Year's effect. Obviously the first 2 weeks are going to be more crowded than the third, fourth, fifth, sixth week. Right. So, I think things are really going to level out and I don't know how long we're going to have to do the capacity. That's, you know, the only thing that's really driving me crazy.
Yeah. That's what I was just about to ask you is if they had a ETA on that.
Yeah. Well, today is June 1st, Dusty. Mm-hmm.
It is.
And so, in British Columbia here, June 1st to September 1st. Is phase 3.
Right.
So we're supposed to be making some changes now because we're in the third phase. Like, you know, they're adding stuff that you can do. The government's going to allow you to camp overnight. Like the fuck. Right. So stupid. So like, you know, stuff's going to change and, you know, the public is demanding certain change as well. I mean, the public's only going to put up with stuff for so long. And this whole forcing people to social distance thing. I mean, there's photos going up now online. They're like, so I guess we're done.
Right. Yeah. It's like, that's what's funny here is I was laughing.
If you're going to open the mall, you can't make people like you just can't force it on people. They're going to walk around.
Yeah. That's like at the gym. We have lockers, you know, vertical and horizontal, and they've got every other one horizontally locked, but straight up and down, they don't. And I'm like, well, everyone knows the virus doesn't go north, south. So it's fucking fine.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, this is a lateral virus. Everyone knows that. It's so when you see shit stuff like that, you're like, and I know what they're doing what they're supposed to do, but it's funny because you're kind of like, well, if I'm standing here changing, it doesn't fucking matter where the guy's shit is. You know what I mean?
No, and the idiotic stuff that these bureaucrats put, like, no training partners. Okay, right. So we can drive to the gym together in the same car. We can. Fucking half the people at our gyms share a joint before they come in. Yep. Then they aren't allowed to train together, but then they can just like sit in the same car, go eat at a restaurant, sit across from each other at the table the whole time. It's just so stupid. Yeah. And so, but that's the stuff that's going to get eroded away. I mean, the public essentially has the power to change that stuff because the public can just go, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, that's already happened here.
Yeah.
Like here, the moment they opened back up, it was over. I mean, it was over. Like, you know, I mean, it's laughable at this point. Like, but what I do like here is I've been other places. You don't have to wear a mask to go places. The employees do. And if you choose to, you can. But no one's giving you the dirty looks or you're not being asked to leave because you don't have a fucking mask.
Yeah.
Because people get it. It's like, it is what it is at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the mask thing is like, it's weird for me. Part of me loathes the idea of being forced to wear one.
Right.
Obviously, I hate rules. But then the other part of me does understand that Asian cities that are very high mask wearing compliance, have better rates and lower spikes. But they're also riding. See, if I lived in a city where I was riding in a packed fucking subway car every day, that might make me want to like not breathe anything in around. Like I wouldn't want to be on it. But where we live, it's just different. Like I live in like a feels like a small town out here. Like there's and our numbers are ridiculous. There's no corona left here. It's just like, you know, it's just a different situation. So it's hard for me to. Like, you know, you see videos of people like screaming at people for not wearing masks. You're a fucking killer. And I'm thinking, I think your screaming is actually more like of a risk than her just walking by with her mouth closed.
Yeah, you're spitting and all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
No, you know? it's kind of, I mean, here it's just been nice because it does. And don't get me wrong. I'm sure we'll have a little backlash because of it, but it was like a light switch. And I think now the other problem is there won't be any going back. The people around here will not let it happen again.
No one around here will either.
You know, because it'll just be like, no, we're not doing that. Especially now with the rioting and stuff that's going on here, because I think as much as I disagree with what's happening, it does show that at the end of the day, if enough people just say no.
Right. No. And so, yeah, so there are many lessons to be learned, good and bad, from what's going on. And like I said, you know, the what's going on there now is one of the biggest advertisements for the Second Amendment I've ever seen. You know, the argument that the no one should own a gun, I mean, fuck, they go into neighborhoods tonight, like you said. It's just you know, it's kind of unbelievable how things can just change like that.
Yep. No, it's been crazy, man, but I'm glad I'm hopeful that there's the change that needs to happen, moves forward. I hate the division, because, you know, I don't know if you saw, but I put up Nathan DeAsha had put up a post and I actually posted his words in it because I think we're a skewed sport. There is no races in bodybuilding. Because we're all doing the same thing. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not one of those morons who goes, I don't see color. No, I know my friend that's black. I know my friend that's this. But I don't feel it. So it's like,
never been a
the
thing.
The fact that it's a thing, and I know it is, so I don't mean to downplay. I've been places. But when your brain is so, I think we were born at the right time, in the right areas, we're in the right sport, it baffles my fucking mind. It just kills me. And I know it's true. And I got friends that have explained it. And I fully understand that racism exists. I just don't understand how.
Yeah. And we are lucky. Bodybuilding is, I've said this before, it's not just a race thing. It's that bodybuilding has always been very accepting of all the fringes as well.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, I remember back in the 90s, I mean, before Ellen came out on TV,
right?
You know, like before the big Hollywood openly gay thing had happened, there were already really well-known gay bodybuilders that were totally loved by everyone.
Yeah,
like everyone fucking loved Bob Paris. He was like gay in the 80s,
right?
Everyone, no one gave a shit. Everyone loved them. You know, there's also other bodybuilders that no one cared. Like they still won shows. They still got like, it was just, we've always been accepting, you know, the fringe, you know, I've always liked bodybuilding because you can have a punk rock bodybuilder, you know, you can have a metalhead bodybuilder. You can have a university scientist bodybuilder. You can have a cop bodybuilder. Like there's people from just all walks of life and all different backgrounds. And, you know, I mean, I've known bodybuilders from every single race and every religion as well, you know.
You know, I compare it to you know, when you're a kid, like the skateboarders. You ever notice if you don't have a home when you're in high school, the skater kids are like, you're with us.
Yep.
And that's how I feel bodybuilding is, like everyone's with us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe it's because we're all freaks. I don't know.
I knew bodybuilders from rich homes, bodybuilders from poor homes. And, but when they were in the gym, they were all just wanted to train, you know, it was all even, everyone in the gym was even. And that's one of my favorite things about it. And the fitness industry generally has always been like that, you know, and it's funny cause you know, and you know, the whole sex thing has been right out in the open in the bodybuilding industry when it was, you know, hidden away in a lot of other worlds and it's all just part of it, you know? So Yeah, it's you know, we see the world through a different lens, Dusty.
We definitely do, and I wish that more people saw it through ours, because it's better. I mean, for lack of better terms, it's better when you just live open and let people do what they do, and you know, and it's nice to see people starting to realize, though, because you do have like culture shock moments, because I do live in my bubble of bodybuilding, where yeah. I actually a couple nights ago, when the first looting started happening, it kind of fucked me up for the night, because I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't wrap my head around the thought process. Even when people were trying to explain themselves, I'm like, but no, you're burning a bit. What is, no.
You know what else is, you know what else I've seen is, you know, these people that crowd the road?
Mm-hmm.
People aren't going to stop for them anymore, because the people that are stopping for them are getting pulled out of their vehicles.
Yeah. Yep.
And beaten near death or killed. Yep. And their vehicle's getting lit on fire. Yeah. So the next time they stand on the road, people aren't going to stop. Like that one trucker that like was slamming on his brakes. Yep. He was like coming, honking, slamming on his brakes, slowing down, comes to a stop. Who knows? Maybe he came like over a hill and he was just didn't realize the road was blocked, but I'm not sure. I don't think he was intentionally running them, because he stopped.
Yeah.
And the road had cleared. He could have kept going.
Yep.
But he like slowed down and then they swarmed on him. I mean, if he had that back, he wouldn't stop.
Nope. And I read a thing. I can't remember who put it up there, but it was written by truck drivers. It basically said, we will no longer be stopping. And if these things continue in areas, you're going to find yourself not having meat, not having the things that we bring to your city, because we won't go there.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you hear about those protesters blocking that fucking fire truck?
No.
So in I think it was, I can't remember what state it was. The name of the city was Richmond. So I can't remember if it was Boston or where it was, but there was a fire truck on its way to a legitimate house fire. It wasn't like a protest fire. It was in like another neighborhood, but the fire truck was going, and the people swarmed the road and blocked the fire truck. And there was a house on fire that had a family in it. And they had to get through this crowd of people, and they got to the house and they saved everyone in the house. But the fire chief was just ranting about how reprehensible the act of blocking a fire truck is. Like, aren't we supposed, like, I don't know why people would want to make the fire departments, like, that is just stupidity of the ultimate level.
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially when, you know, and I think most of us are in agreement that there's two groups of people, those that are protesting and doing what they should do, and those who are just using it as an excuse. But I feel like almost everyone has a few things that we agree no matter what. It's kind of like, you know, if you assault a child and go to jail, you're getting killed. Because even the most hardcore criminals know you don't cross that fucking line.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like most people agree with that, with things like that too. Like, you know, ambulance coming, you get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, just get the fuck out of the way. They got to do what they need to do. So yeah, hearing that is scary. And then, you know, you're avenging a death by possibly killing a family.
Yeah. They just assume that fire truck is going to put the fire out at Target.
Right.
They don't realize there might actually be like another fire.
Right.
With people's lives on the line.
Yeah. Or millions of people that live here, just so you
know. Millions of people, other people that have other concerns.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And then like the whole Antifa thing, like you see those pallets of bricks that are just like happen to show up at all these areas. You don't think those are planted by Antifa ahead of time. They probably dress up like city crews and drop a pallet of bricks off when it's busy and no one notices. And then later that day, there's a fucking riot.
Yep.
So I don't know what's going on with that, but that's my theory.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Just instigating shit to make it worse. You know, they want to see the system crumble.
Yep.
Assuming that something better would replace it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big assumption right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a big assumption to make. So, well, enjoy your week, buddy. I guess we're going solo next week, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's time.
I'll be ready.
All right, man.
Okay. Thanks everybody. And remember, like, share, subscribe, comment, all that stuff. Help us out on the algorithms. And it's just bodybuilding.